access number 10967, Reel 1.
Carl Maxted, Reel 1. Could you tell me, first of all, where you were born and something about your family background, please?
I was born on the 13th of February 1916 in London. My father was with the Prudential Assurance Company and retired in 1927, and I followed him there in 1933. At my day, everyone had to specialise in the Prudential, and I specialised in law. I was taking my Bachelor of Law degree at London University, and when the war seemed imminent, I thought I'd probably be killed just as easily without a degree as with one. So I took my time and passing exams and rode perhaps rather more energetically than I might have done.
At what stage did you expect a war to break out?
Oh, I think all 39, it was obvious it was going to be a war then. I think probably before 38 was seemed likely. But when I was rowing at Henley in 1939, we knew that there was a likelihood of war.
When did you hear the broadcast of Chamberlain on the 3rd of September 39?
This is when he came back from Munich.
No, when he announced the war.
Oh, sorry, I'm going to go on. Yes, I was walking along the river bank at Kew with my girlfriend. I heard it on the PLA, Port of London Authority's radio.
How did you react?
Well, I don't know. I'd expected it, so I wasn't surprised.
When did you actually join the army?
The following year, on the 13th of June, 1940. I still worked at the Prudential. They were pretty good. They allowed everyone who'd gone into the Territorial Army, which a lot of people had done, to go straight away, but they said the rest of us must ought to stay there, and we'd be called up in when we were required, and meanwhile the company required our services. After that, of course, when you went into the army, they continued to pay you the difference between what they were paying you and the service pay.
What was the actual process of joining the army?
I was called up, but I was living at that time at Chiswick. My family were down in Brighton. And I merely went along like everyone else, and I was interviewed by, I imagine, an ex-soldier. I offered to go into the... he asked me whether I wanted to go into the Navy. I said no, and then the Air Force, I wasn't very keen on that. He said, you don't really want to go into the Army, do you? So I said, well, yes, I'd like to go into the Guards if I can get in. And he said, oh, no, I must make up my mind what you're going to, depending on your abilities. So I was called up into the survey training regiment. And by sheer luck, it was at Preston Barracks in Brighton. I think if the army had known that my family was down there, they'd have been sure I didn't go down there. But I, in fact, did. And I was expecting anything to happen. But... when I went down there, the first thing they gave us was a mathematical test. It started with a very easy algebraical sum, but worked up after over 10 questions to a very abstruse calculus, which completely baffled me. I got about halfway through, and as a result of that, they graded chaps into their various squads. And I was in H, which I think was the last one. There were some unfortunates who failed the test, and they were told that they got to go into the work in the cookhouse, perhaps, till they could find some unit which was more suitable for them. And these chaps went in there, and they were doing their washing up, whatever it was they were doing. And one said to the other, "I'm very, very embarrassing, you know. I teach maths at a well-known public school." And the other chap said, "Well, that's all very well for you, but I'm a surveyor." So they compared their notes with everyone else, and found they were all in concern with surveying or teaching maths. So there was always a sort of quiet little mutiny there, which long and saw the battery sergeant major, who was a very nice chap, who said, "Oh well, yes, sometimes our tests are pretty good, but sometimes they fail. Never mind." So he put them all into different squads and everyone was satisfied after that.
Now, you went into the Royal Artillery.
Yes.
What kind of training did you have then?
Well, they'd stopped the survey training. After this was the time, of course, that France had fallen. And so we were put on coastal defence to start with. We did all sorts of funny things, like putting sandbags in on top of very, very rickety kiosks that would have fallen down at the first blow. We went along and knocked away the paths which led down over the cliffs so the Germans couldn't walk up easily. We were given a pickaxe helm and so we could lay on top of the cliff and hit the Germans on the head when they were trying to get up these paths. Really, they struggled. They tried to do it. I was on guard on Brighton Pier in Paris, London. I was entirely surrounded by Londoners who were on holiday. They were all sitting in their deck chairs. And I was given a rifle and 50 rounds of ammunition, which I kept in the pocket, in the front pocket of my uniform. I had my civilian gas mask, because I hadn't got any proper gas mask, just a little cardboard box, which I hung in front of me in a truly martial spirit, and a tin hat, which was about four sizes too small for me, and I stood there, being a large chap, I looked a comedy turn, but all Londoners and where we were on holiday were very happy about this. They all felt relieved to be under guard. The only thing that upset them was the bear couldn't go on the beach because they'd mined it and put wire along. And a seagull with a bad leg got down amongst all these mines. And the Londoners were very agitated about this and wanted me to go down and rescue the bird. And when I said, "No, I'm not going to go down amongst all these mines to rescue the bird," their faith in the army went definitely downhill as well as this. They looked very upset. But we did that for a little. Then I think the French Canadians were going to come along and relieve us. So we were moved back to Lark Hill. And
how confident did you feel about these arrangements for beach defence?
Well, I don't know. I think if we'd thought about it seriously, we'd realise just how damn silly they were. But we were doing something, and everyone saw we were doing something. So I suppose to that extent, it was good for morale. And this one. I remember that in September, I think it was, there was a false alarm, and we all were rushed around. And we lay down in the streets and ready to dash forward. I don't think anyone sort of hesitated on that one. We just had to go and do it.
Was the summer and autumn of 1940?
40, that's right.
Was the Battle of Britain taking place overhead?
Yes, yes.
What did you see of that?
We heard the bombers droning over Brighton in the evening, and I think I was... Had some time off in Sussex. I remember the Air Force. There was a dogfight above my head. Not very much, I would say. The only bombing of Brighton, I think they used to put their new chaps onto that. They just sneak in quickly and drop a few bombs and then they're off again. The only most serious damage when they dropped a bomb which didn't go off in the brewery, and everyone was terribly worried because you couldn't get any beer, of course, for a time.
Did you really feel that the Germans would invade?
I think everyone thought that was likely. That seemed to be the thing. I think we thought they were. I think we hoped there was a force behind us, which we would merely be the guinea pigs in front, so to speak. And there was a strong army behind us. One hoped that was so. Of course, I don't think it was now, having read about it at all. But... we thought it was very likely that they would invade. Certainly, I mean, we were put on duty on Brighton Front to look out to sea, and there were going to be three flares or something like that when the invasion fleet was on its way. So we headed from crossing the channel. And I remember you had to be on, you normally when on guard duty for 2 hours on and 4 hours off. But for this duty, you used to do 1 hour on and 2 hours off, which was very, very tiring, actually, more tiring, I think, than 2 hours. But this was so you could concentrate for a time on seeing if the signal came. And one thought there was a small patrol boat somewhere off in the channel, and these signals would come up, and the balloon would go up really well.
Was there any scare about fifth columnists or German spies?
No, I don't think so. I never felt that that was a real risk. Whether there was the most dangerous thing was some of the Home Guard who were sort of given rifles, and you found a chap struggling to get one into the barrel, and it was pointing straight at you. You know, it was a bit dangerous like that. And I suppose we in turn frightened the pavilions by challenging them if they ever came near our post. I remember one lady sort of saying, "Oh, you did frighten me." And on Brighton there was a comedian called Max Miller, the cheeky chappy, and he lived lived just behind a post where I was, and he used to come over and give us fruit and talk to the chaps. Generally be fun anyway.
What were the Home Guard like, apart from dangerous with their weapons?
Well, I suppose they were just beginning, weren't they? And these were chaps from the 1418 war. They struck me as being extremely decrepit, but then I was a very young man at that time, and I suppose I hoped that they weren't going to be involved with me.
So they did have arms?
They had, I think it was called Ross rifles, which are a Canadian rifle, not the Lee Enfield.
Now, you said you went off to Lark Hill after that.
Yes.
Was that before or after Christmas?
Before Christmas.
What did you do at Lark Hill?
Well, by that time I'd volunteered for the Indian Army and been accepted, and all the papers were there, and we were told as soon as we arrived by Sergeant Major that we were not going to be there for very long, we're going away. So there's no point in trying to train you to become gunners. So we were given a certain amount of leave, and I remember I went home to my family and said goodbye. After I'd been home about four or five times, they got rather fed up with saying goodbye to me on this occasion. And for the rest of the time, it varied. When we first came there to Lark Hill, there were lovely new dining rooms, but none of the washing up machines would work. And all the plates were left on the table for one night, and then again the next morning, the new lot. And finally, we were dragged in by a major who said, "Now, you chaps are going to be officers, and there's no point in training you, so I want you to do this duty in the kitchen for a little while, just so we've got the machines right. And don't regard it as any way demeaning. Regard it as a glorious opportunity to learn army catering methods." So after that, I spent about 3 weeks, I think, washing up rather greasy and dirty tins and plates and things from the kitchen. And I got a pair of rompers, so that was all right. We were sent away to live in a hut miles away from everyone else, because we were going at any moment now. And of course my rompers got greasier and greasier and greasier, and finally it was solid grease. And then they got the machines going again. So they had to find something else for us to do, and I suppose they sent us off for a bit of holiday, a bit more leave. And then when we came back, Lark Hill is very muddy, and it's getting winter then. And in front of the battery office, including the colonel's office, was a sort of quagmire. So they said to us, And I'll go up to the top of the bit behind down Lark Hill and get some turfs, which are up there, dig them out of the ground, bits of large lovely, and let's make a nice little lawn just in front of the colonel's office so that it looks tidy. So we spent, I was my greasy overalls, and had to go up, oh, I suppose, half a mile and pick up these great lumps of dirt, carry them back. So my overalls, which were greasy and mucky, now were now becoming solid dirt and mucky, and pat them down with my hands in front of the office. And we did that, we were doing that quite steadily. I mean, we all had a decent break into the canteen nappy. And apparently the colonel came out and said, well, what have these chaps done that they are being punished like this? I always see the same ones, and they're always working away like this. And of course they said, oh, no, they're not being punished, so they're potential officers. So the balloon went up, you see. And we, who had never been on parade anywhere in Lark Hill, were suddenly told to go back to our hut and get into our uniform and be on parade. And of course we did, and our shoes and boots were quite clean, fairly tidy, but not by any means the immaculate standard of, I suppose, future officers. So we all got ticked off, and we had to go back, clean our boots, doing things. I think we kept on cleaning them for three or four times. You see, always on parade, always sent back. Finally, we used to have to, because this pub was miles away in the mud, we had to find a sort of way round. We travelled all round so as to keep our boots clean to come on this parade. And we were sent for a course with the Wiltshire Regiment at Devizes, I remember, which was very interesting, particularly for me, because it was infantry training. And then we did another gunnery course with the guns at what's the name of the base? Bullsford, something like that.
Bullford,
that's right. That was in the filling of the time, and then in due course, we were summoned to go to Aldershot to join these chaps who were going out to Bangalore.
Why had you volunteered to go into the Indian Army?
Well, I volunteered. There were three things: the parachute troops, the West Africans, and the Indian Army. And I volunteered for them all, and the Indian Army merely got me. But not because of any particular family connection or anything, nothing at all. Not because they. No, it was just they asked for volunteers, and although I know you don't volunteer for anything in the Army, in fact, the chaps who were with me, we volunteered for everything.
Was that to get away from the tedium in England?
Oh, no, I don't think so, because we didn't have any tedium in England. We were quite enjoying ourselves, really. That survey training regiment was a very pleasant one. There were a pleasant lot of chaps, and the regulars who were running it were very, very good chaps, really. We enjoyed it. And I used to go home, and my girlfriend used to come down to see me at the weekends and that sort of thing.
So you said you went to Aldershot. How did you get from there to India?
On the Empress of Japan, I think was the name of the boat. Was it? It had been the Empress of Japan. I think it still was at that time. When was this? This was June 41. That was before the Japanese came in, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes, I think it was. I'm sure it still had the name, the Empress of Japan. And there were, and we went all round the. We went from Glasgow, and we went right across, as far as one could tell from the sun, a long way across the Atlantic, and then down to Cape Town. We went into Cape Town. Some people went into Durban, I think, and then on to Bombay.
Did the enemy interfere with you at all on the way?
Not as far as I know, no. No, not noticeably. I mean, whether we did any evasive action, I didn't.
Who was on board?
Apart from there were some young officers going out. There were, I don't know the name of it, there was some... other ranks, ordinary ranks. I don't know, I'm not sure. And there were we who were going to potential octave chaps. And of course, I suppose every hand was turned against us because we weren't officers and therefore we didn't mix with them, and the other ranks didn't take particularly to us because we were going to be future officers. So we really kept to ourselves in this little bit. But we had some quite talented chaps there, including Alan McNaughton, who's an actor, often appears now on television. At that time, he's a chap who'd just been through radar, and he organised a show and thing on that one. And I would, because the Army fires that Max did and McNaughton are very close together alphabetically, I was always sort of paired with him. And this show was professionals and semi-professionals in it. Quite a lot of them. We did a show in Cape Town in the I think it's the town hall or the city hall there on this one.
What impression did India make on you when you arrived at Bombay?
When we got there, there was no hanging about in Bombay itself. We got onto a troop train and went straight to Bangalore. And of course it was just an ordinary troop train. It was very, very, very hard, seats to sit on. I suppose, like everyone, you noticed the smell and the difference. It was warm. That was what I liked about it too. It was a bit. One felt it was a bit rough, and I know we weren't. We were just potentially. I think the main most impression was when we got to Bangalore, which was in the very early in the morning, and we got off in a heap off this train. And there was a chap there looking very smart. And he said, I want you to fall in. And he called out the names, Mr. Adams. And for the first time, one realised that the Mr. was the important thing. And Mr. Adams, an officer cadet. And, we brightened up no end. And at the end of that, it was one of the most best things for anyone's morale, to hear this chap sort of big and dressed pop, as it seemed to us, after the boat, which had been where we hadn't been anything, nothing. And so we all fell in, Mr. Adams and all his friends, and Mr. McNaughton and Mr. Maxted were next door to each other. And we went along to Bangalore, and we two in each room. And I shared a room with McNaughton. And there were two chaps opposite us. And we found we'd been allocated a bearer called Sammy, who, as soon as we got in, brought us along a cup of tea, a pot of tea, and a banana, and one or two things like that. It was Chota Hazari. And, life began to brighten up quite a bit after that. We were issued with bicycles by an ex-cavalry chap, I think, who then tried to teach us to ride bicycles like you mounted horses, troop will mount. And that was quite a lively little period.
What were you taught at OCTU in Bangalore about being an officer in the Indian Army?
I think they just assumed that I don't think they'd had to cope with a lot coming out from home. When we were at Bangalore, we'd been given a book on Roman Urdu, and a small book. And on the boat, there had been an ex-major from the Indian Army who was returning, having been called back to the service after retiring, who encouraged us to learn Urdu. And that was very sensible. In the Bangalore itself, I don't think there was a certain amount of mountain warfare and learning to run down the hill if the Pathans were after you and that sort of thing. But not very much about desert warfare, I don't think, or the sort of war that we were coming. I don't think India had really woken up to the war at that time. I mean, when I went out, I'd been told to take with me my evening jacket and all my sports kit. And I know, I because I was getting older than I suppose, and been in the army, my dinner jacket wouldn't fit me. So I remember one of the air raids, I went up and saw my tailor in London and had got a new dinner jacket. You know, and the poor chap was absolutely surprised because all the glass was out, you know, of his shop, and fellow coming up and asking for a dinner jacket. But we had all this kit, of course, they'd come out. And but they got hold of it. I mean, I did it up into a great trunk immediately after the octu and sent it to the 14th Punjab headquarters. And I never saw it again until the end of the war, when I found that white ants had eaten all my Henley blazers and things like that.
At this time, when you finished the course, did you put in a request for any particular unit of the Indian Army?
Yes, we were invited to do that. And I'd looked through the list of regiments, and I decided I was too big, being about 6'3", to go into the Gurkhas, who were all small men. I reckon that if anyone was shooting at anyone, it would probably be shooting at me rather than the small chaps. But then I looked through the Indian Army list, and I found that the Dogras, who I didn't know very much about, seemed to have got more VCs in the First World War for rescuing their officers under fire than anyone else. And I reckon that was a pretty good trade to have in a regiment. So I put in for the Dogras and as a first choice. And then I put in for the Punjab regiment, who were a quarter Dogras, as a second choice. And I got the Punjab regiment.
How did you get up to them?
From Bangalore to Jhansi. Just travelled up. We all parted. We went our different ways. I think McNaughton did go into the Gurkhas. Some went to the Indian Mountain Battery and went on to do a course there to follow that up. And I was told just to get to Bangalore, and I did. Until I get to Jhansi.
What did you find when you got there?
It was, of course, Bangalore had been a nice, fairly green place. Jhansi seemed to be in the middle of a desert anyway. That's what it struck me. I found that it was a new regiment. The colonel was a man called Jeremy Quinn. There were three regular soldiers there, three regular officers, and the rest were ECOs.
The rest were what?
ECOs, the Emergency Commission Officers. And it was clear that the battalion was being formed by having drafts from other battalions who may have been regulars or had more service anyway, and some new recruits. And I was given the Pathan company of Pathans. I found very nice chaps. And we started training for open warfare, because it was assumed that we would go to the desert.
How did you do that?
Well, they did a certain amount of shooting, but I mainly remember we used to do exercises, and really, I think it was merely to get the chaps out and